And so I think perhaps that argument isn't as strong and compelling an argument as it might first appear when you hear it.
Okay, I note that, you know, just reviewing these statutes briefly, the whole structure seems predicated upon reasonable belief. That's civilian as well as law enforcement. And I guess, for one, if we change the standard from reasonable belief to probable cause, I guess we need to re-examine the rest of the statutes and decide if they're needs to be a different policy, if we want a different standard for civilians versus law enforcement, and whether that standard perhaps it ought to be throughout. We change reasonable belief to probable cause. I haven't heard many people suggesting that, and I don't know if we should have a different standard for law enforcement as opposed to civilians. A civilian only has to reasonably believe something, but an officer has to have probable cause. I'm not sure how much of a distinction there is out on the street in real life. I think there is a distinction, but that gets a little blurred other than the court of law. The parties may attempt to interpret it in light of something that's already happened, and that's always difficult. Counsel?
As I recall, my conversation with Frank Gruber about this case and the different standards, I believe I recall that he said that you need probable cause to arrest, and we're talking about an arrest situation, and that you need probable cause on a statutory basis in Oregon to arrest. So it wouldn't be out of sync with the factual situation. If you're in arrest, you need probable cause, and it would fit in at that point. And I don't know the historical reason why we have two different standards. Why you have to have probable cause to arrest, but you only need to use reasonable, you only have to reasonably believe that force is necessary to use deadly force in a situation where you are preventing the escape of a person from custody.
Can I ask counsel a question?
Yes, Representative Kapansky.
Aren't there two standards involved here? One is this whatever level you decide. I guess we all agree that reasonable belief is a few inches shorter than probable cause, but the other standard here is serious physical injury. And that's a pretty high standard of injury, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
In terms of my discussion in previous bills. So there's two levels
right. That
we're looking at in this definition.
Right. Could I, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can I read one paragraph out of the Supreme Court decision that, and read it slowly? Do you have your Supreme Court decision in front of you? It talks about exactly what they decide, under what circumstances one should use deadly force.
Sure, go ahead.
It says the use of deadly force to prevent the escape of all felony suspects. I'm on, my copy says V2171. It would be, let me see if I can cite you to it. It's, the opinion's broken up into an A, right towards the beginning, and a B. And it's, my copy is V2171. It's on the second half of the page, the first full paragraph.
Okay, yeah.
The use of deadly force to prevent the escape of all felony suspects, whatever the circumstances, is constitutionally unreasonable. It is not better that all felony suspects die than that they escape. Where the suspect poses no immediate threat to the officer and no threat to others, the harm resulting from failing to apprehend him does not justify the use of deadly force to do so. It is no doubt unfortunate when a suspect who is in sight escapes, but the fact that the police arrive a little late or a little slower afoot does not always justify killing the suspect. A police officer may not seize an unarmed, non-dangerous suspect by shooting him dead. The Tennessee statute is unconstitutional insofar as it authorizes the use of deadly force against such fleeing suspects. However, the statute is not unconstitutional on its face. Where the officer has probable cause to believe that the suspect poses a threat of serious physical harm, either to the officer or to others, it is not constitutionally unreasonable to prevent escape by using deadly force. Thus, if the suspect threatens the officer with a weapon, or there is probable cause to believe that he has committed a crime involving the infliction or threatened infliction of serious physical harm, deadly force may be used if necessary to prevent escape, and if, where feasible, some warning has been given, meaning the police officer is going to use his gun to say halt and identify who he is or she is. As applied in such circumstances, the Tennessee statute would pass constitutional muster. Now, that's the crucial language in the opinion. And I think that the Department of Justice's language tries to tie that in very closely, except for the different standard, reasonable belief. I know you might not agree, Mr. Fontana, but that is a simpler way of putting that decision.
Okay, well, I want to ask members to review these two drafts closely, because sometime very shortly I'm going to be asking for a motion or a vote to see what the preference is of the subcommittee, because I'd like to get one version of the other moving. But I want to invite Mr. Fontaine or Mr. Fessner or anyone else here who wishes to make a comment in response to our questions or the information we've reviewed so far, or wants to speak to either of the drafts, to feel free to come forward at this time. Mr. Fontana?
Are both sides of this argument in the room right now, Mr. Chair?
Say again?
Are both sides of the argument in the room right now?
I believe so. Mr. Fessner is here. I'm representing the Department of Justice. And he's here to speak or respond to comments. And Mr. Fontana, I think we do have representatives of at least a couple law enforcement agencies or groups.
What I've just handed to a clerk or to the committee council is a hand-engrossed version of the ACLU's proposed amendments that we discussed earlier, and I trust that the committee will consider those as well as the other drafts prepared by the Attorney General's Office and Legislative Council. When council discussed the Attorney General's draft, she said that it does follow it well, except when you come to the standard, and that, of course, is the key phrase, whether it's probable cause or reasonable belief. You don't really have any choice. The U.S. Supreme Court does set the law of the land, and whether you pass the statute out of this committee or not, the Supreme Court law is what's governed. Oregon can adopt any language it wants to. It can leave the statute as it wants, as it is now, but it won't have any effect. It's still not going to be constitutional if it doesn't meet the Supreme Court standard, and that's probable cause. The result would be that officers would be misled as to what the law is, and they might well use force when it's not constitutionally permissible, with the result that not only might some person die unnecessarily, but the officer and the jurisdiction which employs him will be subject to civil damages, which are significant. So even if this committee wants to make a decision just based on dollars and cents, you should try to make the statute reflect the U.S. constitutional decision. If you don't, it simply misleads people.
Okay, counsel.
Excuse me, Mr. Fontana, I want to ask you one thing about your draft that you put before us. There's one other distinction I didn't comment on to the committee, and it's in C of Section 1 of your draft. Where, have you got it?
Yes.
Okay, where it says to prevent the escape of a person who has been arrested by or is otherwise in the custody of a peace officer if the person uses or threatens to use imminent deadly physical force as a means of escape. One of the things the Department of Justice discussed in their memo to the committee is that it isn't really clear in the Tennessee versus Garner decision whether the federal test appears to leave open the possibility that future dangerousness, not just immediate dangerousness, could be sufficient to justify the use of deadly physical force. In your amendment, as I see it, you're saying the person has to use or threaten to use imminent deadly force which talks about a present situation and a present demonstration of dangerousness. In the draft in C that the Department of Justice has drafted, it says the officer reasonably believes the person is inflicting or threatening to inflict serious physical injury, which goes to future dangerousness. And that is a distinction that I think the committee ought to consider, because it is an important consideration. And yours just talks about an already committed act or conduct that shows that the person is dangerous, versus their version, which says that the officer reasonably believes that the person might be dangerous, and if they think they might be dangerous, then they can use deadly force, and there is a difference. One of the examples that the police officers gave to us, I think, on Friday was, what about if you stop somebody and then they flee from you through a crowd? Can you use deadly force to stop them because they may be a threat to the crowd? Would you care to comment on that?
I certainly wish the U.S. Supreme Court had. It's unfortunate they weren't able to deal with every situation that the committee may well want to consider. I think all we can do is try to understand what the court would have done in the situation. And you can do that from reading the entire opinion to get an idea what they're talking about, what their concern is about. And what their concern is that it shouldn't be done, you shouldn't use deadly physical force unless someone's life is being threatened. The particular language you use, you know, it's up to you more in that case, because the Supreme Court isn't so definite there.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. Fester?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is John Fester, and I'm with the Department of Justice. I'd like to just very briefly explain what I was trying to do, or what we were trying to do, by drafting our proposal the way we did. The first thing that we tried to do was to put all of the changes required by the Supreme Court's decision in one place so that it would be fairly simple. It was a conscious decision, therefore, not to amend the other statutes that relate to private citizens' use of force, use of deadly force, or police officers' use of physical force that's short of deadly physical force. I think those are all issues that the Supreme Court really did not address, and that it's not necessary to address if all we want to do is comply with what the Supreme Court said. Mr. Fontana and I disagree on whether the Supreme Court's decision requires probable cause to be the test that an officer will use to make all the determinations that he may have to make. The language that counsel read from the Supreme Court's decision does use the term probable cause, and there's certainly an argument that can be made for the proposition that an officer has to have probable cause to believe that he's being threatened, probable cause to believe that the person, the suspect, has committed a crime, or probable cause to believe that the person is escaping from custody. He must have that level of proof before he can use deadly force. However, I read that decision not to require probable cause, but simply a reasonable belief. There is language elsewhere in the decision, for example, which uses this phrase. It's later on in the opinion. It's the first paragraph of subsection 4. In the last sentence of that line, they're discussing the degree of belief that the police officer had concerning the dangerousness of this particular suspect, and they say, restated in Fourth Amendment terms, this means Hyman, who was the officer, had no articulable basis to think that Garner, the suspect, was armed. I think that the articulable basis standard is reasonable belief standard that we've used in Oregon for many years in the criminal law. I think that that satisfies the Supreme Court, but I'll admit that there's room for disagreement. One other thing I wanted, and so,
Special, would you go over that again? I guess that seemed thin to me. I mean, compared to the languages read by counsel, so I want to be sure I understand the basis of what your views are.
What I'm suggesting is...
Well, where is it? First of all, again, I want to read it out of the opinion, because this is what we're supposed to...
It's subsection 4, it's headed with the Roman numeral 4.
Okay.
It's right before the end of the opinion. It's on probably the final page of the opinion. And it's the last sentence of the first paragraph within subsection 4. It's the paragraph that begins, the district court concluded that Hyman was justified.
Okay, I guess I'm looking for the language that supports what you said. Okay. Oh.
It's that last.
Okay.
You have a version that's printed like this.
Yes.
Yes, I'm looking at it. I'm trying to see. Okay. Restated the Fourth Amendment terms. This means that Hyman had no articulable basis to think Garner was armed. That's the language.
That's the language. I think the language there.
What kind of a? I mean, okay. So that means reasonable belief.
Could I interrupt? You follow down the next line, the next paragraph. Officer Hyman could not reasonably have believed that Garner. So that you, if you're looking for that exact language, I would say that is better than no articulable basis. If that's what we're looking for. They do use that verbiage. Does that help? Or hinder our cause?
I think that helps make the point that I'm trying to make, which is simply that I'm not sure this opinion really requires us to use the phrase probable cause in all these circumstances. But if I can make one other further point on that, if you look at the version that the Department of Justice has come up with, or the original version of the bill, there are three subsections that talk about when you can use deadly physical force. The first is the traditional self-defense, where the officer himself is threatened. The second is where he's making an arrest of a person who has committed a previous violent felony and therefore is considered dangerous. And the third is to prevent escape from custody of a person who's already been arrested. If probable cause is the test that we need to put in here, it should only apply to the subsection B, because that's the only place where the officer is required to make a legal conclusion as to whether the suspect has committed a previous violent felony. Probable cause is a standard that is often used in search and seizure cases where there's at least some time for reflection and a legal decision has to be made. I don't think that probable cause is a workable standard for whether the officer believes he's being threatened with deadly force right then and there, because the officer is going to act based on what he reasonably believes is about to happen to him. Let's assume the person's pulled a gun or is attacking him in a direct way. Probable cause is not going to be the standard he's going to use. It's going to be a reasonable belief based on articulable facts that the officer pointed. And I don't think the Supreme Court decision changes that. But I think that's ultimately a decision that the committee is going to make, because reasonable minds can differ on that question. One second point, if I may, that I'd like to make is having to do with the changes that the Legislative Council's version would make in the statutes. I don't think that it's desirable to do that kind of changing the other sections, because the more you change, the more you're going to result in conflicts, I think, among those statutes. And one thing, for example, that you could look at would be that in the version that Legislative Council has, that version lists a group of felonies. And it says if the officer has probable cause to believe the person has committed any of these felonies, then he can use deadly physical force to listen, including burglary in the first degree. it's our opinion that that's a misstatement of the law after the Supreme Court decision, because the Supreme Court decision says you cannot shoot burglars. You can only shoot burglars if there are additional factors present. The person's either committed a violent felony crime against the person of another, or is presently threatening the officer or a third person. And I have some serious concerns about that listing of the felonies in that statute. I think that's specifically what the Supreme Court was telling us we cannot any longer do. And that's why we used that test or phraseology that the person has committed essentially a violent felony, a felony involving the use or threatened use of serious physical injury or deadly physical force. Any questions?
Okay. Counsel?
Yes. Mr. Fessner, basically we're talking about a factual situation in the Supreme Court decision where the person had been in the house and was apparently stealing a purse or some money and fled out of the house into the backyard, and the police officer came around the back of the house, saw this person, who turned out to be a 15-year-old person, up against the fence, and he shone his flashlight on the person's face and hands and determined, as he said in the record, that the person didn't have anything in their hands. The kid then started going up the fence and he shot him in the back of the head, all right? Now, when we're talking about factual situations, didn't the Supreme Court just narrow this to the situation where the officer has to have probable cause to believe that that person that they're trying to apprehend has not committed a serious felony? And in this situation, the kid hadn't. There was nothing to indicate there had been any violent crime committed, and they shot this kid anyway. All right. So when you talk about the officers in the situation where somebody has a gun in their hand, that's an entirely different situation from the standard that the U.S. Supreme Court set in this case. We're talking about a factual situation where the officer wouldn't be entitled to use deadly force to defend himself. We're not talking about that kind of a factual situation, are we?
I think that's a fair way to put it, yes.
Okay.
I think that's
okay.
Correct.
Because listening to those police officers who were there and sheriffs on Friday, I was impressed by the quality of the depth of their understanding and the good questions they asked about the factual situations and whether this particular standard would keep them from defending themselves in a very tense situation. And in looking at it, I didn't think it did, and I'm concerned that we don't characterize this decision as taking the ability of police to defend themselves away in a situation where somebody does have a weapon or they can attack a police officer. That's all I'm concerned about. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions or comments?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes, Representative Hill.
Mr. Fessner, what is the holding of this case? Let's get them. I mean, can we turn to the first page of the case? Now, it says, held. The Tennessee statute is unconstitutional so far as it authorizes the use of deadly force against, in this case, an apparently unarmed, non-dangerous fleeing suspect. Such force may not be used unless necessary to prevent the escape, and the officer has probable cause to believe the suspect poses a significant threat of death or serious physical injury to officers or others. Now, you know, holding versus dictum, now is that the holding? Do you agree with that or not?
I think the language you just read is from the syllabus that immediately
yes.
precedes the opinion. And
that's right. And I just use that as an indication of what's held. Now, if you want to find a different holding in here, I'm open to that. So.
Well, the syllabus is not considered an official part.
I understand that. If you want to find the official, I ask then, what is the holding if that's not it?
I would get back to what counsel just indicated. I think that the holding in a narrow sense is a police officer may not constitutionally use deadly force to apprehend a fleeing burglary suspect whom he knows to be unarmed and non-dangerous. To the extent that you want to, what the case says, that's all the case says. That's the rule of law that it enunciates. It doesn't go on to write us a book on what do we do under other circumstances,
sure.
which is a problem with all appellate decisions. My reading of it is what it says is that the officer must have one of two things essentially present before deadly physical force may be used. One is that the officer or a third person must be under attack or about to be attacked using deadly force. And my argument is that the standard by which the officer is to judge that situation is simply, does he have a reasonable belief that he's about to be attacked? Secondly,
that he has a reasonable...
Yes, I think that's all that's required. I don't think the officer has to have probable cause to believe that he's about to be killed. I don't think that the court deals with that issue. They do use the term probable cause, and I admit that. I concede that they do use that term throughout their opinion, but I think you have to look at what they're talking about very specifically here. They don't, I think, use it in the sense that we would use it with respect to the second part of it, and that is whether he can use physical, deadly physical force to apprehend a suspect. If you're talking about that part of it, not where he's being attacked, but where he's apprehending the suspect, if you're talking about that part of it, then there has to be a showing to some extent that that suspect is dangerous and has committed a violent felony. That's where the Supreme Court's use of the term probable cause is justifiable, and probably that there's a pretty strong argument for the proposition that it ought to be in there. I'm just taking the most limited view of it that I reasonably think I can.
I understand. Thank you, Miss. I appreciate that.
Representative Kopeski.
Mr. Fessner, could you define reasonable belief?
Well, I think there are some definitions already available for that. On 161.45 means a definition of that. Reasonable belief means a reasonable belief in facts or circumstances which, if true, would in law constitute an offense. I don't know how much that really helps you. Traditionally, I think the courts have made the distinction between reasonable belief as you have to have some facts that you can articulate and point to make a conclusion, and that conclusion must be generally reasonable. Probable cause is a little higher than that. Courts have wrestled with that for centuries, probably, as to what it exactly is, but I think that courts generally tend to say probable cause is a little higher standard. It's maybe more likely than not, or a well-warranted suspicion is another phrase that's been used in the courts to describe it. I don't know if that answers your question or not. Both terms are defined in ORS, but not always in connection with this particular issue. Some of the definitions have to do with search and other matters of that sort.
Okay. Are there further questions? Okay, if not, the chair is prepared to take a motion on any of the three sets of amendments or bills before us.
It's not so great
to Mr. Hughes, would you like to make a comment at this time?
I'm very confused. Ted Hughes, representing the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police and the Oregon Peace Officers Association. We've discussed this at length since our meeting on Friday, Leslie, and thank you for holding that meeting.
Thank you, Chair, this is ideal.
The one thing that the law enforcement agencies want to come out of this deadly force issue is clarity, number one. And number two, conformity to what exactly the U.S. Supreme Court said. That's very clear. Now, it's not very clear on what is the difference between probable cause, number one, and reasonably believes. I cannot tell from the discussion that we had both on Friday and today if the statutes, the ORS, has defined those two in clear terms. I don't think they do. I'm just hoping that any action the committee takes is in conformity with the U.S. Supreme Court decision and nothing more. I guess that's my reading to the committee.
questions?
Well, just for the sake of argument, I suppose we'll start off with something. I move, Mr. Chair, the adoption of the amended version of by the Department of Justice of 2638, using the terms reasonably believes, and also the term serious physical injury, because when it's tied to that, I believe that to be significant. And I don't know how I describe this for your edification. Is anybody unclear on which one I'm talking about? Yeah.
The short one.
The short version.
Okay. Representative Phillips moves the draft version of amendments to House Bill 2868 prepared by the Department of Justice. Sorry.